There is good news to report about life on America's Indian reservations. A new study from Harvard University finds that incomes for Native Americans living on reservations are rising much faster than incomes for the overall population. There's still staggering poverty on tribal lands. The average income remains less than $9,000 a year, but that's up about 30% from a decade before. And as NPR's Chris Arnold reports, the gains are being seen even on reservations without gambling.
The little town of Kayenta sits on a craggy, windswept plain near Arizona's Monument Valley. In a little playground, tumbleweed has piled up 5 feet high against a rusty fence. The cold wind blows a chain that used to have a ball on the end of it against its old tetherball pole. This is high desert, and a winter storm of icy rain and snow is moving in across the plateau.
Yeah, that's some weather.
It's blowing the rain, that's why.
Richard Mike, a local Navajo businessman, jumps into his pickup truck. Mike grew up here. As a kid, his family raised sheep and lived in traditional mud and cedar huts called hogans. Now he owns a string of Burger Kings across the reservation. Mike says his hometown here has changed a lot in recent years. After being pretty stagnant for decades, Kayenta is looking different.
Really different. We had no sidewalks and no... These sidewalks are no more than 2 years old. These streetlights are less than a year old.
Researchers at Harvard say there's been rapid economic developments on reservations across the country since 1990. Some tribes have set up large manufacturing operations. Others run successful ski or golf resorts. But probably more common in many rural areas is just the quiet growth of small businesses. And that's what's been happening in Kayenta.
In 1988, we could look straight down this road. There was nothing. Okay, the only thing that was here was across the street was the Holiday Inn and the Chevron were here.
Richard Mike is standing in his Burger King in Kayenta looking out at the main street. He says in recent years, about 10 small businesses and franchises have sprung up here, most of them Navajo-owned. Being on a highway and a two-hour drive from just about anywhere else, it's a natural stopping place for tourists driving through the Southwest.
Once I put this in, then I built the hotel across here, and on this side, McDonald's came in and Blue Coffee Pot, the little trailer cafe owned by Winifred Watson, and she's Navajo. And she also owns the gas station next to it. You can't see it from here, but there's a gas station.
The town has started charging a sales tax to pay for things like sidewalks, a police station, and a new town meeting hall. And these small businesses are creating new jobs. Richard Mike alone now employs 220 people between the Hampton Inn he's built and the four Burger Kings he runs across this large reservation. The jobs range from minimum wage to $90,000 a year. Joseph Kalt co-directs the Harvard Project on American Indian Economic Development.
Per capita income, the income of the average person, has been rising about three times more rapidly for American Indians than for the average American.
Kalt actually set out to look for the impact of casino gaming on Indian economies. He got some money for the study from a native gaming group. Using census data, he found that tribes with gambling operations showed a 36% increase in incomes between 1990 and 2000. But Kalt says what he didn't expect was that the non-gaming tribes saw almost as big a jump, 30%.
We had the research assistants run the computers back and forth and back and forth. Because it was surprising to see the non-gaming tribes. So much attention has been put on the gaming tribes. I think that people forget that hundreds of American Indian reservations, the tribal governments have decided not to have gaming. And those tribes are also, on average, growing very, very rapidly.
Kalt's theory about what's going on here is that gaming is just one highly visible example of a much broader movement towards self-determination. He says for 30 years, there's been a gradual shift in law to transfer control away from Washington, D.C. and into the hands of local tribal leaders on reservations. He says that's finally made it easier for more tribes and native people to launch money-making ventures. Other factors like the broader economy play a role, too.
Do you want to get the wires and all that other stuff, too, or just the battery?
Back in Kayenta, Chi Linville has recently opened this small auto parts store in the back of the laundromat that his family runs. Like many people here, he says he hasn't noticed much of a rise in incomes. One Navajo economic development official is skeptical that there really has been the kind of dramatic increase that the census data indicates. The Navajo Nation reports that people on this reservation still make just $7,000 a year and that the unemployment rate is more than 45%. Chi Linville.
Like, I get people every day, you know, asking me for a job, and right now I can't afford to really hire anybody. And it's really hard. You say, oh, well, you know, you got two businesses, you know, you got a lot of money. I really wish that was true, you know. It's really not that way.
Still, the town manager here says getting more businesses going will help break the cycle where Native people take their paychecks or government checks and drive 100 miles to a border town to shop. They wouldn't have to do that if they could buy more things here, and that money would stay in Kayenta. But it's still pretty hard to start a business here. Getting a loan can be tough, and there's also a 2-year approval process. Business owners complain that just to open anything, even a donut shop, still requires the signature of the president of the Navajo Nation, as well as that of federal officials. Then again, there are ways around that.
That's a hole in the roof.
Lawson Benali is standing in the old beat-up theater building in Kayenta that he uses to store fruits and vegetables, stacking them on the empty theater floor.
Yeah, it's full of potatoes right now, yeah, full of produce. Oranges, apples, onions, peanuts.
Benali didn't do any of the paperwork he was supposed to for his business. He's not even paying rent on the building. He just moved in. Benali, who's 30, is also a teacher at the public school here, and he says it's working out pretty well doing this on the side, selling his vegetables out of a flat panel truck.
And we run around to what we call around here flea markets, and basically there's certain towns that have it on a daily or a weekly basis. So we hit there, and that's where we make all of our sales, and surprisingly, that put us right about 52,000 last year, and I think this year we're actually getting a little bit over 75,000 in sales.
Benali says he has friends who also returned to the reservation after college and have found work. Harvard's Joe Kalt says a lot of times when people think of Indian reservations, they either think of a few tribes getting rich on gambling money or of dirt poor squalor and hopelessness. He says the reality is that on many reservations, people are working hard to overcome poverty in all kinds of different ways. Doing that might take another 50 years or so, but he says many reservations are moving in the right direction. Chris Arnold, NPR News.